much for taking the time to talk to me today, Kelly. You wrote a book in 1996 entitled The Doctor Who Cures Cancer. Maybe you could start out by telling everyone a little bit about it. Like, the book was about Emmanuel Revici.
Yeah.
Who was he and what did he do?
He was born in Romania, and he graduated first in his class in medical school. And he had a patient come to him, a woman who had advanced cancer, and she was pregnant. And they opened her up to do surgery on her, and they realized that there was nothing they could do. They just closed her up. They didn't take the cancer out. And he thought at that point, you know, that was the last of that, that, you know, she was going to, you know, die of cancer. She showed up at his office, I think it was 2 years later, with her baby, and she was cancer-free. And this dumbfounded him, because she hadn't had any treatment. And so he began to think about what could, here she was pregnant, and how did the surgery and her pregnancy affect her recovery. And that led him to explore different things, and to make a long story short, he actually patented 100 different medications that he developed. But he was the kind of man, he slept about 2 to 3 hours a night, and he worked 7 days a week, treating mostly cancer patients, but also other patients. And despite the fact that he, due to a lab accident, he ended up in an iron lung when he was about 42, something like that, he got out of the iron lung, which I believe was from the medications, and he lived to be 101 years old.
Wow. So he developed these medicines, and were those medicines accepted by mainstream?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. They were accepted initially by many doctors who came from some of the leading cancer institutes around the United States. He was located in Mexico at that time. He had to flee. I didn't mention. He had gone to France to the Pasteur Institute to do more research, and then it was around the time of Hitler and the Nazis, and he had to flee France and was able to go to Mexico. He could not get into the United States initially, and he was there for about 6 years. And during that time, the word got out to places like the McArdle Institute in Wisconsin, which was at that time a top institute, and UCLA, and different places. And the doctors were amazed. But then things turned on him. There was a dean from the University of Texas who decided to draft a letter that he had all these doctors sign, and it was untrue, but they signed it anyway. And it was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. And that was the beginning of many, many different attacks on him that resulted in other doctors not finding out about him, or if they did find out about him, they thought that what he was doing was ineffective.
What was your motivation for writing this book? I ask this because at this time in your life you didn't have cancer, is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, I had graduated from college and decided while I was in college that I wanted to be a writer, and I started writing for the college newspaper, writing a column. And then after that, I actually was published in the Washington Post on their op-ed page. And they had paid me for it, a good amount, for the amount of effort it took. And I thought, well, this would be a nice way to have some income. I could just keep writing columns for the Washington Post. So I was looking for something to write about. And I knew a lot about alternative medicine. And at that time, President Clinton was attempting to get some kind of health care bill. And I thought, well, how can we tie in natural care? Because I knew that that would be the best result of all. So I made a bunch of phone calls and found out that there was a congressman who had sponsored a bill. And so I went to see him, and I interviewed him in his office. And he told me about a hearing that had taken place over on the Senate side. And I went and got the transcript from that. And there was a father that was talking about his daughter who had been treated by Dr. Revici, and it was an amazing, you know, story. And so I called him and talked to him for quite a bit, a couple hours. And then I contacted the clinic, and they sent me some information in the mail about what Dr. Ravisi had done. And I just looked at it, and I said, oh, my goodness, this isn't an article. This is a book.
Wow.
And I just, from that moment on, it was just, you know, full speed ahead. It took about 2 years to write the book, to do the research and to write it.
So you said you knew a lot about alternative medicine, and how did you that come about?
How did it come about?
Yeah.
I actually had kidney disease when I was in my, from about the age of 20 to 25, off and on. And I finally decided, I found a doctor who was a holistic doctor, and he got me on the right track, and so that it reversed my kidney disease. And in fact, I mean, when I would urinate, it would come out sometimes in like the color of Coca-Cola.
That's not good.
Yeah, so it was not good. And so from that, I had read some books earlier, a couple books earlier that led me to go to a holistic doctor.
Okay.
And that worked really well. And then, so I've been interested in it since I was about 24, I guess, maybe around, somewhere around that age, 25.
So then, after you wrote this book in 1996, a couple of years later, if my timeline's correct, that's when you contracted cancer?
Yeah, let's see, I think it was 1998. I believe it was 19. It's either 97 or 98. Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, I went to take a shower, and I noticed that I had this brown lesion that was about the size of a half dollar on my thigh, on the side. And within about 2-3 days, I had a dozen of them. And they were all over. And so I thought, well, I might have, you know, let me check this out. I might have cancer. And so, and because of what I knew, having written the book and other things I had known, I wasn't concerned in the least. Most people, you know, hardly anybody that's told, oh, you have cancer, that's like, oh, my gosh, their life flashes in front of them like that. It wasn't like that for me at all. So I went and got a pregnancy test from the grocery store, and or from the, you know, the pharmacy.
Yeah.
And I tested myself, and in fact, it came out positive. I learned later that if it had come up negative, it's not a real accurate test, the one you buy in the grocery store, because you have to have enough of a certain hormone being released to make make it trigger positive. Well, I had enough because it triggered positive. So I took what I learned from writing the book, and I took some other things I'd learned previously, and I modified it, and I just put it all together into a simple recipe. And in 4 or 5 days, all my lesions were gone. And so I think I'm not sure if I took it for another day, ate it for another day. But then I stopped because I didn't particularly care for it, and because it's hot. And so after about 2 or 3 days, about 3 or 4, the lesions started coming back. They weren't quite, you know, before they were brown, and now they were sort of just a ring on the outside and more reddish. And so I just went back on it for another 4 or 5 days, and that time I know I did stay on it for another day. And then I continued to take the oil for 6 months. And the 4 or 5 days, they all disappeared again. And so I just stayed on the oil because I figured, well, I need to balance my metabolism, which is one of the keys to getting rid of cancer, is having a balanced metabolism. And the oil helped me to do that. It's been 12 years. I've never gotten one of those lesions again at all.
So essentially you had the disease for about 2 weeks then?
Yeah. If you add up the days, it comes out to about 2 weeks exactly. Now, in my case, because I didn't do chemo or radiation or surgery, which interferes with the body's ability to recover, I recovered very quickly. And I wasn't taking any other medications, drugs at that time. I still don't.
Okay.
Don't take drugs. I think that helped.
Okay. Can you provide the recipe that you used?
Well, it I can. It varies depending on the metabolism. The basics are to freshly grate habanero peppers, and that's not jalapeno peppers, that's habanero peppers. These extraordinarily hot peppers, and to grate fresh garlic. And I put them on what's called Ezekiel bread, which is a sprouted bread. I think there's also machine bread, but I use Ezekiel bread.
Ezekiel is a brand name, correct?
Brand name, yes. Yes. It's a sprouted bread. And then I smothered it with butter. I mean, I literally covered the peppers and the ginger. I just put on the half a piece of bread, folded it over, I put the butter on there, smothered it, because I knew it was going to be really hot. And I ate it. At the time that I did it, I actually had a tincture made up of the habanero peppers, and it's actually easier to do it that way, to make a tincture. But you know, rather than getting people concerned, like, oh, all these different things I have to do in a tincture, how hard, that's really hard, you make a tincture in about a minute. But so I used a tincture with the peppers, and I used the freshly grated garlic.
What is a tincture?
A tincture is just basically taking your herbs, putting in a blender, and then what I did is however much peppers you have, that volume, one third of that volume I used water, and another third I used vodka. So you have two thirds of the way filled up is, you know, liquid after you put the peppers in. And you turn the blender on for a minute, and you have a tincture. That's how easy it is.
Okay.
Just nothing to it. You do take the stems off of the of it. And yes, people ask, do you leave the peppers in it, the seeds in? Yes, you do. Absolutely. So that's how you make it. And they're both hot, the ginger and the garlic. I mean, not ginger. You can use ginger if a person has, it just can't handle peppers. You can freshly grate ginger, maybe about a couple inches of it. And so that's what I did. I've since learned that if with my metabolism, would have been better even would be to put it in yogurt as opposed to the bread. But let me back up a little bit. There are two metabolisms. Ravisi called one of them being too anabolic, and the other one is called too catabolic. You don't really have to worry about the words too much, but those are two processes that we go through during the day, except that people who have cancer are stuck pretty much on one side or the other, and they may be totally stuck on one side or the other. And so the idea is to, if a person's too anabolic, is to get them balanced, get them more catabolic, and vice versa. If they're too catabolic, you want to bring them and balance them. And that's where the oils come in. I use the emulsified cod liver oil. All this is on the website, where you can see it, on the homepage article. I used the emulsified cod liver oil because I was too anabolic, and I wanted to balance it back, and it worked really great. And I always prefer the emulsified version because anybody who has cancer, the digestive system probably isn't optimal. So it's better to have the emulsified if you can get it. Had I been too catabolic, then I would have used either evening primrose oil or borage oil in place of the cod liver oil.
How does somebody find out whether they're catabolic or not?
If they have pain, there's a simple assessment they can do. They can get some black coffee and a couple boiled eggs, boiled or poached only. And what they do is to evaluate their pain before they eat it. They go, okay, my pain is whatever. If you want to do it on a scale of 1 to 10, give it a number. and then eat it and then see if your symptoms improve or get worse. I think that's one of the key things about my recipe and about the work of Dr. Ravisi that really no one else is doing. People talk about everybody's too acidic with cancer. That's not totally true. Some people are too alkaline. And so it's important to balance either one, because if you use the same treatment for two different people and one is too anabolic and the other is too catabolic, the treatment will help the one and hurt the other. And so with my recipe and Dr. Ravisi's work, you find out that, in fact, you can tailor what you're doing based on your own metabolism, which is obviously going to increase your odds of getting 100% better.
So how did you find this cure? Because I know it's not in your book.
Yes. I took what I knew from Dr. Ravisi, and it's okay, I've got one, I need to balance the metabolism. That's where the oils come in. The other part of it, I had watched a series of videotapes that included Dr. Richard Schultz, and in one of the videotapes he talked about 10 power herbs. And he mentioned in passing that garlic was an anti-cancer fighter, and that the habanero peppers are like what he called the lead wolf. It breaks up the congestion, and cancer cells, the congestion is fibrin, basically, which is a sticky protein, and cancer cells have 15 times as much fibrin associated with them as do regular cells. So the pepper gets in there and wipes out that congestion. It also has some anti-cancer properties of its own. And then the garlic, it has anti-cancer properties. And so the combination is a 1-2 punch that just, you know, lays it low.
On your hub pages, it states that you had stage 4 cancer. Is that correct?
Yes.
And beforehand, you were just telling me that it was testicular cancer?
Yes, I had told a couple doctors about what my symptoms were and using the pregnancy test, and both of them immediately said, that's testicular cancer. But I had pain, these sharp pains in my testicles that showed up. It's funny, they didn't show up initially, but when the lesions had come back, it did show up, and I was sitting in a conference, ironically, at the NIH, the National Institutes of Health. There was a conference going on, I was in the audience, and I would get these flashes of pain, like electrical pains almost, or kind of akin to getting hit in the balls.
Okay.
Whereas normally when you get hit, you know, you double over and it takes a while to recover. This pain passed almost instantly, which was a relief. But they kept coming, boom, boom, boom. Probably a half a dozen or a dozen times while I was sitting there in the audience. And so when I described it to the doctors, they said that's what you had.
So how did you know it was stage 4?
If you have lesions on your body that are below and above the diaphragm, that's automatically considered to be stage 4 cancer. And I had a dozen lesions that went from my calves, and all of them were good-sized lesions. And they were from on my calves, on my thighs, on my butt, on my back, both legs, on my upper back. They were all over.
And why didn't you go to the doctor?
Well, I didn't have any insurance, and I knew they couldn't do anything for me anyway. And I also knew that doing a biopsy can help to spread cancer. And since mine showed up so fast, with these lesions popping up almost like popcorn, I thought the last thing I want is to have a needle stuck in these things and turn them on even faster.
So what was happening in your life at the time, at this time when you woke up and you went in the shower? Was it a stressful period of time? Like, do you have any theories about why you might have gotten cancer?
I had been gaining weight, and I wasn't eating right. I was eating a lot of ice cream. how it's possible that that's, I don't know what caused it, but that's a possibility.
Okay. I know on your HubPipe pages, you're asking people if to send in their stories to you.
Yeah.
Have you got a lot of responses from that?
Yeah, there's about 3,000 comments on that one article. And you can see through there, and I even created a second hub page just at one point. And I said, well, here's some of them. Here's some of the fantastic results. Like there was a one lady who had, she wrote in. She only wrote in one time because I don't have a way of contacting them unless they want to contact me.
Mm-hmm.
And she said she'd used my recipe, and in 2 weeks, the stabbing, knife-piercing pain and the lump went away. Another fellow had a 10-inch tumor in his colon, and he had been trying all kinds of things for several months, but he was having daily flatulence and bleeding and pain. And nothing that he tried seemed to make a dent. And when he started on my recipe within the first day, his flatulence, his bleeding, and his pain all went away. And then ultimately, his 10-inch tumor went away as well.
Okay, great. But not everybody who's tried your recipe has been successful, or have they?
No, of course not. Of course not. You know, I can't say why that is, because I'm not there with the people. I don't know what their lifestyle is. I don't make a lot of dietary suggestions only because I'm afraid it'll create too much of a thicket of confusion, because everybody has a different opinion about a diet. And I don't want that to interfere with, okay, this recipe works. I'd rather have them find their own. And I don't encourage them to, I probably should to eat better, but I just want them, I know that the recipe by itself, you know, maybe it'll turn a light bulb. You know, I don't feel comfortable trying to direct their lives as to what they're going to do, because a lot of times the people think, oh, I've got to give this up, I've got to give that up. And they're already under so much stress and so much fear that to throw another thing on top of them, it's going to scare them off. And so, you know, and people who started on it, they've already had chemo and radiation, and they, you know, at this point nothing has worked, and then their relative gets online and starts looking to see how they can help them. So the person's already got cancer all over the place. Their body's been damaged by the chemo and the radiation and the surgery. They have scar tissue, and scar tissue can block the very best treatment that you have. You have to get rid of that scar tissue in one way or another sometimes. And that's for those people. I've told them that if I had what they had, I would use Zymessence or some other proteolytic enzyme, which will help to soften those that scar tissue, so the recipe can have a better shot at helping them.
Yeah. So your recipe works better if somebody is taking it fresh without doing any chemo or radiation or having a biopsy, right?
Right. Right. And there's also another factor that people, even if it isn't chemo, a lot of times people are already on several drugs, okay? And typically doctors will prescribe antidepressants when someone gets cancer, almost as a matter of course. Well, those antidepressants, they cause their digestive system to become sluggish, so they're absorbing less. Their ability to absorb things has been decreased. And so just that one drug might have a negative effect. Plus, if they're taking other medications, who knows what kind of effect that those medications are having on them. Me, I personally, if I can, I would want to get off all my drugs if I can. Now, some drugs you don't want to get off immediately, but, you know, if you want to live, there's an herb for everything, just about. And, so that's the approach that I would take, you know, to ensure I could get, you know, 100% better.
Okay. So with that, I just have my last question. Do you have any words of wisdom or thoughts on healing that might help others? I know you provided a lot so far.
I guess this is going to be shocking to people, but cancer is easy to cure. You know, if you recall, scurvy has a history. We've cured scurvy. You know, you eat an orange and you're well. You know, you get well by eating oranges. If scurvy had not been cured, to this day, and modern medicine is trying to cure it, I would be pretty sure that what they would do is give people all kinds of chemotherapy to stop the processes of the injury that's being caused by the scurvy. And scurvy would be more of a scourge than it was, and so that people would be dying from scurvy. Fortunately, before modern medicine came about, scurvy, the cure was found. But if we were treating it today, it would be hard to cure. And we don't think of scurvy as hard to cure. We think it's very easy to cure. Cancer is the same way. There's so many things that can cure cancer. And mine's just real cheap and fast. You know, if we allow the body to heal itself, it's not so hard.
So there are other things that also work just to cure cancer?
Oh, lots of things, sure. There's probably 50 different things. I couldn't list them all, but there's people have been cured by many, many different things. See, what people don't realize, doctors don't realize even, is that cancer cells are in our body all the time, and what they're for is if we cut ourselves, they actually involve in the healing of a cut. Okay? So they turn off immediately when we heal. So they're designed to turn off very rapidly. And so it's not surprising that you can get well in a hurry, depending on, you know, how dedicated you are to it. You know, if you're gonna eat a half a gallon of ice cream each day and take the peppers, it's gonna take longer. You know. So yeah, I don't know if those are words of wisdom, but that's what came to mind.
That's great. Just on that, back to what you were saying about when you're taking your sandwich or your sandwich of habanero peppers.
Habanero
peppers. What else were you eating? Were you just eating those?
No. I don't remember. I didn't change my diet a great deal. I'm trying to remember.
So is that just
I
like
may have quit eating ice cream? I'm sure I quit eating ice cream.
Yeah.
Because I was really addicted to it. I was eating a lot of ice cream. So I'm sure that I stopped doing that. I'm not a vegetarian by any means. I think some people need to eat meat, particularly type O blood types. I'm a type O. Type A is probably good to be a vegetarian or close to it. But for me, you know, I didn't give up eating any meat or anything like that.
Okay.
Fresh vegetables are always good. You know, we know that's healthy. I hope that's not getting into diet. I think everybody would agree that fresh vegetables, greens, are healthy. Yeah. You know, they're really good for you.
I was just wondering whether you had eaten anything else when you were having that, the habanero sandwich.
Oh yeah, I wasn't fasting. Other than that, that was just what I had. You know, what I ate for breakfast, I guess you could say.
Okay, so how many times would you eat it a day?
I'm sorry.
How many times would you eat that a day then?
I just did it once a day. I think I took the oil some days twice a day. And some people have done the recipe twice a day, and it seems to work for them. If I had really advanced cancer or possibly a big tumor, that sort of thing, I would not do it necessarily twice a day because I wouldn't want too much of the cancer to pass through the bloodstream into my kidneys because the dead tissue, because it might be hard on the kidneys to do that. By the way, I should mention that when people do my recipe, if they have blood work done to measure for cancer markers, their cancer markers will go up. And the reason for that is that the cancer needs to get out somehow, and the markers that they measure for are passing through the bloodstream. So what I say is, you know, for me, if my markers are up and I'm feeling really good, then I know it's working. If my markers are up and I'm feeling worse, then it's like, no, maybe I'm using the wrong oil or something. It's not working. So, but that's, people get scared off. You know, and the doctor, that's what they're trained to think. Oh, the numbers are up. You're dying. Well, actually, the numbers being up is a very good thing.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, Kelly, for joining
us. And you're quite welcome.
That's really helpful.
Okay.
Great. Thank you very much.
Great.
Bye, Kelly.
Thank you. Take care. Right. Bye-bye.